Friday, February 22nd, 2019, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. We do get together every single weekday, and we talk sports with a dose of common sense. We are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Friday to you. We have made it to another Friday. And as good of news as it is that today is Friday, just wait for it, because I'm going to make it a little bit better. Because today, February 22nd, is not only Friday, as good as that is, it is also National Margarita Day. Woo-hoo! Now, known to be the most common tequila-based cocktail served in the United States, the margarita is a cocktail that consists of tequila, triple sec, and then either lime or lemon juice. I can't imagine making it with lemon juice, but that's just me. Margaritas can be served on the rocks, shaken with ice, frozen or blended with ice, or just straight up with no ice whatsoever. Now, there are a number of different ways that you can make margaritas, but if we go back to the December 1953 issue of Esquire magazine, they say the proper margarita cocktail was as follows: 1 ounce tequila, a dash of triple sec, juice from half a lemon or half a lime. You pour that over crushed ice and you stir. Rub the rim of your glass with rind of your lemon or lime, and then spin it in salt, and then pour your drink. Okay, hold up. Do not make your margaritas like that tonight. That recipe, I don't know, that's from the 50s. That is not a good margarita recipe. That is for like amateurs. Here is your recipe. Here is your daily dose margarita recipe, okay? Cup of tequila, cup of triple sec, cup of lime juice, add a little simple syrup just for flavor, add your ice and blend, and if you want to add some strawberries or raspberries or something, knock yourself out. One margarita and you're done. You don't even have to drink any more than that. You'll be a cheap date. But that is the way you make a daily dose margarita. You don't do a dash of this and a dash of that. Put it all in there, blend it all up, you're going to have a great margarita. So again, not only is today Friday, it is a margarita Friday. It is a tequila Friday. And remember, working out, hitting the gym, putting in all that hard work can make you look way better without your clothes on. But two or three of those Daily Dose margaritas can do the exact same thing without all the work. And here's the best part. You won't remember any of it tomorrow. Hey, if you'd like to contact us, maybe let us know what you're going to be throwing up tomorrow. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Doesn't have to be vomiting related. It could be that you have a question. Maybe you've got a suggestion. Maybe you have a specific sports topic that you would like us to tackle here at The Dose. Bring it. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, be sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. They've got sweatshirts, they've got hoodies, they've got t-shirts over there, a number of different Daily Dose items over at tpublic.com. All you have to do, search Daily Dose once you get there, scroll down until you see our logo, and you can find a number of Daily Dose items over there. So be sure you stop by tpublic.com. Today on the show, you know, we do have a sports news story coming out I want to cover. But then, as we do on most Fridays, we take the time to preview the weekend in sports, kind of let you know what is going to be coming over the next couple of days, what you may want to block off some time for, keep some free time, because there might be a certain game that you don't want to miss. And as we do on most Fridays today, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5, always a popular segment on the show. You have to make sure that you tune in on Fridays and get your Daily Dose Top 5. First, the one story coming out that we do have to touch on, and I hate opening with this, but there is horrible news in college basketball yesterday as Syracuse basketball coach Jim Boeheim was apparently behind the wheel of a car that hit a pedestrian on a highway and it killed the man. Syracuse police said in a statement on Thursday, Jorge Jimenez was a 51-year-old male that was outside his car on Interstate 690 after being involved in another unrelated accident. This was all due to bad weather, they said. His car had hit the guardrail and had come to rest in the middle of the road. The occupants of the vehicle had gotten out and moved to the side of the road. Boeheim's car attempted to avoid that car in the road and instead struck the man in the middle of the road. This was after 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday night. Police were, of course, called to the scene. Now, they did field sobriety and alcohol sensor tests, and those came back negative. The police said that speeds couldn't be determined, but that they are calculating that Boeheim was traveling at the proper speed for the highway. There was no traffic citation issued, but the investigation is still active and ongoing, according to police. And of course, Boeheim is cooperating with the investigation. And honestly, this is an awful, awful story, because it sounds like Jim Boeheim was doing everything right. Wasn't speeding, wasn't drinking, wasn't driving recklessly. I mean, you feel terrible for the victim. You feel terrible for that family. You feel terrible for Boeheim too, though. And you do wonder, and I hate to bring sports into something like this, but you do wonder, how does this affect him? How does this affect his team? Because is he even going to be able to coach? Just a terrible story. We're actually going to be talking a little more about Syracuse here in a few minutes, but just an awful story coming out. Okay, we're going to get past that. Coming back, we do need to preview our weekend of sports. We have some very good college basketball to watch this weekend. Hey, don't forget, March Madness is coming quickly. Plus, the NBA is getting things cranked back up after their All-Star break. Better make some time in front of your TV this weekend. Okay, so let's shift over to our weekend sports preview. We try to do this every week. Take a look at some of the biggest and best upcoming events over the weekend, just to make sure that you're aware. Here are some things you might want to set some time aside for. Instead of you just flipping on the TV and scrolling through that guide and saying, ugh, can't find anything on, we try to give you a heads up when things are going to be on, let you know, here are the best games that you're going to want to tune in for. Again, you never want to be that person that is missing the big game because you just completely forgot about it. So we try to give you the heads up on Friday, let you know, here is when you are going to want to have free time. You're not going to be tied up doing some chore or going to something that you didn't want to go to anyways. We just let you know ahead of time. Here's how to plan your weekend. Also, we do pick the games, do our best to give you an idea of how we think they're going to go. Last week, we were okay. We went 5-3, which again is in the money. But as usual, we're trying to do a little bit better every single week. Keep in mind, all times given are Mountain Time Zone, so adjust your schedule accordingly. Now, as you get started on your National Margarita Day tonight, you could start it off with a college hoops game that is going to be below most every single person's radar. But this might be better than you think, because the Metro League is on the line as the Canisius Golden Griffins will be facing the Monmouth Hawks tonight at 5 p.m. I told you, it's going to be below everybody's radar. But Canisius is the first place team in the Metro League. Monmouth is just a half game back in second place, and there's a pretty good chance that one of these teams is probably going to be playing in the NCAA tournament in a few weeks. So maybe you take a look at this game tonight, and maybe, just maybe, when it comes time to fill out your bracket, you're a little bit ahead because you say, oh, you know what? I saw that team. I actually watched that team play in a competitive game. I kind of know what to expect. Hey, Canisius shoots the ball pretty well. I will take them in this game, but that game gets started at 5 p.m. tonight. One more game to keep an eye on tonight that might be worth your time, and it is another early start as it is out east, but Kawhi Leonard lost his initial rematch against his old team when he had his first visit back to San Antonio. You would think that this time around, Kawhi Leonard would like nothing more than to beat his former teammates, the San Antonio Spurs, now that he is in Toronto. No, the Toronto crowd won't be as intense as the San Antonio one was. But this is still the number 2 seed in the East in Toronto versus the number 7 seed in the West in San Antonio. Hey, and the Raptors may not have wanted that All-Star break. Going into the break, they had won 6 games in a row. They were playing extremely well. I will take Toronto tonight, and I think Kawhi is going to get a little bit of revenge on his former teammates. Moving on to Saturday, we've got 2 very good college basketball games on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. So again, be careful about National Margarita Night. I know you're going to want to play it up big, and I get that. I'm right there with you. But you've got to recover by 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. We're going to start off in the ACC. At 10 a.m., we have the number 3 Virginia Cavaliers going to the number 18 Louisville Cardinals. Now, both of these teams, I think, are going to make some noise in March Madness. I think they're both pretty solid. Apparently, though, neither one of them can beat Duke. Virginia has now been beaten by Duke twice, and Louisville just gave up a 23-point lead last week to Duke. But like I said, both of these teams are still pretty solid. The biggest problem for both of them, they're both turning the ball over way too much. Just take care of the basketball. Sometimes that gets lost. We saw that in the North Carolina Duke game on Wednesday night. Just stop turning it over. If you just took care of the ball, you would get so many more shots than your opponent. Virginia and Louisville, pretty decent game here. I will take Virginia. I know they've been struggling a little bit lately, but I think they may get healthy against Louisville on Saturday morning. Also, on Saturday at 10 a.m., you know, last Saturday, Tennessee was ranked number one. They had the longest win streak in the nation. Then last Saturday, they went into Lexington and Kentucky laid the wood to the Volunteers and just beat them down. Now, Tennessee has rebounded with a win over Vanderbilt earlier this week, but they will have a pretty good test on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. to see if that Kentucky loss was just a fluke or if now the number five Volunteers, maybe they've got problems. And it was interesting this week listening to sports media because you could hear a lot of people saying, yeah, I knew Tennessee wasn't going to last. I knew Tennessee wasn't going to be so good. Yeah, you weren't saying that over the past month. Let's slow down on that because I think Tennessee actually can still play a little bit. They will be going to Baton Rouge to face the number 13 LSU Tigers who are also coming off a loss. They lost in overtime to Florida on Wednesday night. Both of these teams, Tennessee and LSU, they both need a win here. They can't afford to keep losing. I'm going to actually take Tennessee on the road to steal one here. I think Tennessee is still going to be a team to deal with. You know, we've got a solid NBA matchup at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning too, as the Portland Trailblazers will have to be up bright and early because they will be facing the Philadelphia 76ers back east. Now, Portland had better get some sleep going out east for that game because it's going to be very, very early for them. Portland is currently the number four seed in the Western Conference. They need to keep winning because otherwise they can't stay ahead of the Houston Rockets. Meanwhile, Philadelphia is the number five seed over in the East, and you know that they really want to climb up into that top four so that they could get a home playoff series. When you think of Philadelphia and what they have, that starting five now, they've got Joel Embiid, who, by the way, is going to be sitting out a few weeks with a sore knee, but then J.J. Redick, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, and Tobias Harris. Hey, that's as good as any starting five in the Eastern Conference. I'm actually going to go with Philadelphia in this Saturday morning game. Moving on to 1:45 p.m., we've got another interesting game. It is always interesting to see how teams bounce back from a tough loss. But at 1:45 p.m. on Saturday, we're actually going to see how a team plays after a big win. Because the North Carolina Tar Heels, fresh off that dominant win, albeit over the Zion Williamson-less Duke Blue Devils on the road, have now had their backs padded for a few days. Well, on Saturday, they will be facing a very scrappy number 16 Florida State squad that has won 8 games in a row. Does North Carolina allow that win to kind of come back and haunt them? Hey, look what we did. Did you see what we did to Duke? Yeah, slow down. Because you've still got to play that next game. And Florida State is playing pretty well. I struggle with the idea that they're going to be able to score much. I don't like Florida State's offense that much. But North Carolina had better be very, very careful. Because I will say this. I think that Duke game, the way that it all laid out, I think it hid a number of flaws that North Carolina still has. In fact, I'm going to take Florida State with the upset on this one. On the other end of seeing how you perform after you come off of a big win, at 4 p.m. on Saturday, we have a college hoops game that is going to be really interesting and really tricky because the Duke Blue Devils are coming off of that loss and they go to Syracuse, a team that, you know, we talked about earlier. I don't know what to expect. I don't even know if Jim Boeheim is going to be on the bench. So who knows what Syracuse is bringing to the table? Do they rally and say, hey, we're going to play this for Coach Boeheim? Do they kind of fall apart? Because maybe he's not even there. I have no idea what to expect. And you know, your first reaction might be, well, Syracuse might struggle. And Duke might come out angry after that loss to North Carolina and just dominate. Maybe. But we still don't know the status of Zion Williamson. And don't forget this. That Syracuse zone is going to give Duke problems. Because we keep seeing it. And I know we keep waiting for it to change. Duke doesn't shoot the ball that well from outside. Against Syracuse, they're going to have to knock down a few shots. I'm going to take Duke in this game, but they may have to work for this one. It might be a lot tougher than you'd think. We move on to Saturday night, and we get a big-time matchup in the NBA West as the Houston Rockets will go to the Bay Area and face the Golden State Warriors at 6:30 p.m. Now, the last time Rockets guard James Harden scored less than 30 points in a game was clear back on December 6th when he had just 15 points against Utah. Now, I've told you this before. I don't know if Harden can keep up this pace. But since that game, and he is now scoring 30 points or more, the Rockets have gone 22-9. So as much of a tear as he has been on, he is also getting the Rockets to win. Of course, Golden State is the number one seed in the West, and they just seem to be rolling since DeMarcus Cousins joined them last month, and now they are saying that they are lifting Boogie's minutes restrictions. So you could see more Boogie with the Warriors coming up. I will take the Warriors in that game on Saturday night. Let's move on to Sunday. The NASCAR boys got started last week at Daytona as fans were treated to multiple double-digit car pileups. Denny Hamlin held on late to win, but there were like three or four huge pileups just in like the last 10 laps or so. And every single one of the wrecks was the result of a trailing car nudging the car in front of them out of the way. But here's the thing, NASCAR loves this stuff. So they're not about to ban these bumps that cause these huge wrecks. They show the replays of the huge wrecks every single chance they get. Now, this week, NASCAR goes to Atlanta for the Quick Lube, Quick Trip, Quick something, I don't know. Something with Quick in the name, which is ironic because there will be nothing quick about this race. It'll last about 5 hours. Kevin Harvick won this last year. I don't know, if you need like a 5 hour weekend nap, tune into the NASCAR Atlanta race on Sunday and here's your chance to take that nap. At 1:45 p.m. on Sunday, we actually get a pretty solid rivalry game in college basketball in the Big Ten, as we have the number 10 Michigan State Spartans going to the University of Michigan to face the number 7 Wolverines. Hey, Michigan has been stumbling a little lately. They've had losses to Iowa and to Penn State. When Michigan can find some offense, they're pretty good. But that's not going to be easy on Sunday. They will face a very tough Spartans team that is starting to play better defensively, and they seem to be figuring some things out after they had that 3-game losing streak earlier this month. Cassius Winston, if you haven't seen him, this kid is starting to take over for Michigan State. I'm going to take Michigan, but I'm going to take them very cautiously here. One last decent NBA game on Sunday at 3 p.m. as the Los Angeles Clippers, who we know have cleared some salary cap space by moving Tobias Harris out, are coming to Denver to face the number 2-seeded Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference. Hey, the Clippers are trying to hold on to that number 8 seed in the West, and you know that the Clippers would love nothing more than to finish ahead of the Lakers. Can you imagine that? If the Clippers somehow beat out the Lakers and LeBron James this year for a playoff spot, I don't know if I can see it happening. But right now, the Lakers are 3 or 4 games back. The Nuggets should start getting more and more healthy now after their time off from the All-Star break. I will take the Nuggets at home. Finally, we finish off the weekend. If you're really hurting for some football this weekend, and honestly, who among us is not, you can watch the Alliance of American Football on Sunday night at 6 p.m. It sounds like the league is already struggling a little financially, so you might want to watch this while you can. Now, every game this week is actually featuring a 2-0 team versus an 0-2 team, except for the one that we put down here for you, because it's going to feature two teams that have a 1-1 record each. Yes, the San Antonio Commanders lost a close one last Sunday to Orlando, the top team in the league. But hey, San Antonio is getting decent play from their quarterback, Logan Woodside. They will be facing Mike Martz's San Diego Fleet team, who is also 1-1, and they're playing pretty good defense. They're not doing much offensively. I guess I will take San Antonio. I have no idea, but we will go with that. Hey, there's some decent things out there for you to watch if you want to tune in and see some sports this weekend. Hey, coming back, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Of course, last weekend was the NBA All-Star Game. And you know, when I was watching the NBA All-Star Game, we saw a definite trend there. But who is it that starts these trends anyways? We're going to talk about these trends when we get back. Now, as we do every Friday, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Five! Of course, like I said, the NBA All-Star Weekend took place last week We talked about it earlier this week, but how three-point happy is everyone in basketball these days? I mean, in the All-Star game itself, those two teams combined to take 167 three-pointers. But it's not just the NBA. College kids are jacking up threes at a historic rate. Go watch a high school game. High school kids want to shoot the three all the time. I just finished coaching my daughter's middle school team this season. And you know what they want to do? They want to shoot threes. Why? Because they see the success of shooters like Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, and they want to imitate what they do. I honestly believe that Stephen Curry has caused one of the biggest innovations in basketball of all time. It used to be all about the dunk. You'd go into the gym, you would see kids working and killing themselves trying to get dunks down. That's not actually the case anymore. Yes, you still have that, but now you have kids going out and saying, watch, I can hit the step back three. I can hit the crossover three. I can shoot the three while fading away. It is all about the three. And you know what some of it is? A lot of kids look at a guy like Steph Curry and they're like, hey, he's not that big. Because most kids aren't the size of LeBron James or Michael Jordan, but they look at Steph Curry and they say, he's not a physical freak. Maybe I could do what he does. So with Steph Curry in mind, today we count down the Daily Dose top five players that changed the game. Let's get started. Coming in at number five, we have a player that completely changed the game in ways that we are seeing every single season. Because Spencer Haywood was a big time scorer that had stops in Denver, New York, Seattle, New Orleans, and he even finished up a little bit with the Los Angeles Lakers. But in his 1969-1970 rookie season, Spencer Haywood led the ABA in scoring with 30 points a game and in rebounding with 19.5 rebounds a game while leading the Denver Rockets to the ABA's Western Division title. But what was it that Spencer Haywood brought to the game? Well, he actually paved the way for a number of players because he was the first player to turn professional without completing 4 years of college. That was a rule at the time. But the ABA adjusted their policy with Haywood being used as an example because he needed to get to work and support his family. He would eventually join the NBA and the Seattle Supersonics in 1970, but the NBA still had that eligibility rule forcing Spencer Haywood to the sideline. He couldn't play. He was in the NBA and he literally couldn't get on the floor. The case ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court where Haywood eventually won and became the first NBA player to suit up despite not completing 4 years of college. Eventually, eligibility rules were changed, and think of all the players that have rode off of what Spencer Haywood did. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, and not even guys that went to college for a year or two. What about the guys that just jumped straight to the NBA, not even going to college? Guys like Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, they skipped college altogether. You might not think of it, but Spencer Haywood absolutely changed the game, and he comes in at number five. Moving on to number four. Basketball is a pretty simple game, right? Put the ball in the hoop. If you can put the ball in the hoop, if you can shoot it, if you can score, then you should be a player, right? Yet no player in NBA history has more rings than Bill Russell. And he wasn't a big scorer, so he must have been doing something right during his time with the Boston Celtics. And it was because Russell revolutionized the game through his defensive play, an area of the game which a lot of people really didn't focus on. But Russell was this fierce competitor, and he had this perfect timing for blocking shots and grabbing defensive boards. In fact, his presence in the paint would scare opponents from even trying to go in and attempt a shot against him. Russell made defense an important factor in the game, and think of the players that have kind of modeled their game after that Russell style. Think of those defensive-minded players like Dennis Rodman. Even a guy like Patrick Ewing, who could do it at both ends, but defensively, he was very good. Ben Wallace. I don't know if Ben Wallace could score points in an empty gym, but defensively, he could dominate. Dikembe Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning, even someone like Kevin Garnett, DeAndre Jordan. Some of these guys didn't have a huge offensive arsenal, but they were still able to have success simply following the blueprint of one Bill Russell, and he comes in at number 4. Moving on to number 3. Magic Johnson inspired hundreds of point guards that came after him. But he was actually not the first tall or flashy point guard to play in the NBA. No, I would give that title to the Big O, because Oscar Robertson changed the game from the perspective of a big man playing the point guard position. Robertson was 6'5". He was a 12-time All-Star, an 11-time member of the All-NBA team, and he did win the MVP once in his 14 professional seasons. In 1962, Oscar Robertson became the first player in NBA history to average a triple-double for the entire season. He averaged 30 points a game, 12 rebounds a game, and 11 assists a game. But think now to some of the bigger point guards that we have seen since Oscar Robertson. Scottie Pippen played the point at times. LeBron James will run the point at times. Penny Hardaway, Jalen Rose, Ron Harper, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Sometimes we'll see a big guy like him at 6'10 playing point guard. And then, of course, you have Magic Johnson, who might be the greatest point guard of all time. Magic was 6'9". But without Oscar Robertson, maybe we never see a coach confident enough to give a 6'9 player the point guard spot. But after Oscar, we saw Magic step right into that role and excel. Oscar Robertson comes in at number 3. Let's move on to number 2. And I know the first thing you think of when I say Wilt Chamberlain. No, not the 20,000 women. Well, I don't know. Maybe that is what you think of. But I think of a guy who was freakishly athletic. Wilt Chamberlain didn't just play in the NBA. He played pro volleyball. He ran track in college. And while most of his scoring in the NBA, yes, it was based on dunks and based on power, he did also show you could be an athlete and you could do things other than just go down to the low post and turn around and dunk. Because don't forget that Wilt Chamberlain led the league in assists in 1968. He was an excellent passer. And as a result, we have seen a ton of big men that develop their game beyond just, you know, drop, step, and dunk. Of course, I mean, think of players like Hakeem Olajuwon, who played a 5, but he honestly played it like a 3 or a 4. Or someone like Tim Duncan, who you could run an offense through at the high post. And think of guys like a Chris Webber, who ran the floor like a guard. A Dirk Nowitzki, who steps outside and can shoot it. Even think of guys today like a DeMarcus Cousins or a Joel Embiid. They are big men that don't just go down to the low post and look to turn around and dunk. But Wilt Chamberlain showed that a big man could be a great athlete too. And as a result, we have a ton of big men like that that can do a number of different things and hurt you in so many different ways. Wilt Chamberlain comes in at number 2. But if we are looking at one of the most impactful game changers in NBA history, we need to think about one thing. Who plays basketball? Big guys, right? Giants. They run the league. Oh, sure. You might see a guy back in the 50s like a Bob Cousy just dribbling all over the place. I love those radio calls, by the way. And the Cous is a whiz with a basketball, see? He's got it on the string like a yo-yo. And you see the video, and he's dribbling like with one hand. He's looking down directly at the ball the entire time. But I'm not talking about a small player just being a ball handler. I'm talking about a smaller player being a scorer. Because in the 1972-73 season, Nate Tiny Archibald led the NBA in both scoring and assists, becoming the only player to win the titles in both categories in the same season. Tiny Archibald averaged 34 points a game and nearly 12 assists a game for the Cincinnati Royals. His ability to drive inside, to finish over much bigger players, it was something that we have now seen a number of players take from. We see so many players now that aren't big guys, they're not giant guys, but they are not afraid to go inside and still score. Think of guards like Isaiah Lord-Thomas, who could just go off any night. Kevin Johnson, who is not afraid to attack the paint. What about someone like Allen Iverson, who just drove inside without any fear whatsoever? Steve Nash, who was so good at that little teardrop floater. Stephon Marbury was way more of a scorer than a passer for being a small guy. Tony Parker, Kyrie Irving, they are all taking a page from Nate Archibald, because it didn't matter that he wasn't a big guy. He knew if he was smart enough and he was careful enough and he perfected those shots, he could still go inside against the trees and find ways to score. And again, we bring it back to, what do kids watch and what do they try to imitate? Kids see players like a Nate Archibald and say, I want to play like that guy. And I might not be 7 feet tall, but I can do what he does. If I work at it, I can become the kind of player he is. And we're seeing it right now with Steph Curry and the three-point shot. Hey, it is Friday, and we have made it through another week. Have to say thank you all so much for listening to the Daily Dose every day. Thank you for reaching out, for sharing the tweets, for sharing the posts on Facebook. Thank you so much for subscribing to the show wherever you listen. And more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with friends, with coworkers, and with family. We appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all Monday. Have a great weekend.